Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Taylor Edrington, and he'll be answering your most important questions on the seasons of the Arkansas River. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Taylor a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Taylor Edrington about the seasons of the Arkansas River. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk-weight and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. They're located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Before we introduce Taylor, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For a drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Taylor's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Designed to Deceive, a DVD which features Royal Gorge Anglers head guide Larry Kingrey talking with some of the more innovative fly tiers in the industry about how they design patterns. So to win this this exciting DVD, here's what you need to do. You need to be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be about something we talk about during the show. You must submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. And if you're the first one to do that, you'll win this DVD. Our guest tonight is Taylor Edrington. Taylor was raised in the fly fishing industry and studied on the river under the tutelage of such greats as Gary LaFontaine, Mel Krieger, Chuck, Father Gill, Larry Kingrey, and his father, Bill Edrington. Summa cum laude, graduate of the Leeds School of Business in the University of Colorado, Taylor now owns and operates Royal Gorge Anglers on the Arkansas River. Prior to his ownership of Royal Gorge Anglers, Taylor grew up guiding and instructing on the Arkansas River and various other Rocky Mountain watersheds. For just shy of a decade, Taylor guided in both central and southwestern Alaska and is a U.S. Coast Guard certified saltwater captain. Taylor also worked as the general manager of a flagship lodge in the Iliamna region of Alaska for three seasons. Along with his fly fishing pursuits in the U.S., Taylor has hosted fly fishing adventure travel for clients on five continents through his global adventure travel business, Cross Country Travel Group, and holds three fly rod world records. Taylor is an extreme advocate for fishery conservation and simply strives to build awareness about the sport of fly fishing for all ages. Taylor, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Roger. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you on. And like we were talking earlier, in Colorado, where we both are right now, it's a cold night. So nice to be inside.
A little chilly. Little chilly. Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we just got a huge snowstorm here, and it's we got lots of snow, which makes for good water, and we hope to get some more here before the winter's in. So anyway, let's talk about the Arkansas River, right smack dab in Colorado. Taylor, give us a sense of where, you know, we have an international audience, so I always like to kind of orient them as to, you know, where the Arkansas is in the world.
So the Arkansas runs 110 miles before it reaches Canyon City, where our fly shop and guide service is located. And it starts at the headwater. It is a freestone river, so its headwater is located near the town of Leadville, which is in south-central Colorado. Basically accessible at the very top end via I-70, and then runs south, and like I said, runs 110 miles before it reaches Canyon City through various, you know, beautiful, you know, picturesque canyons, national monuments, 102 gold medal miles before it reaches Canyon City. And then it flows east from Canyon City to Pueblo Reservoir, which is the first reservoir on the Arkansas River, and then obviously flows east through the plains of Colorado to Kansas. So that kind of, you know, gives you a little snapshot. Obviously a large river that eventually, you know, meets the Mississippi. So that's kind of gives you a little idea, but essentially what we focus on is the 110-mile quality trout water section from Canyon City upstream to Leadville.
Okay. Now, it's in this day and age, it seems unusual to have a river go so far without a dam on it. Is there any history to that? Did they ever try to dam it up, upriver from Canyon City at any point?
Well, fortunately, you know, due to the efforts of all the conservationists and recreational enthusiasts on this river from, you know, even, you know, mining time, 1800s, really no real push to insert a dam above Pueblo Reservoir. So, you know, obviously we've had, you know, mining concerns on the tributaries that feed the Arkansas River, and we do have contributing tailwater tributaries, and so those do contribute to the flow, and that flow is adjusted via flow management program throughout the year. But, you know, thank God, you know, we've got a beautiful freestone fishery until we reach Pueblo Reservoir, which, like you said, is very rare. Even in Colorado, which, you know, obviously we're known for conservation and you know, trying to keep these free-flowing rivers, you know, free-flowing. So, you know, yeah, we're very fortunate here, and we enjoy the river.
Well, let's, if you could give us a quick tour downstream from the headwaters up there at Leadville and kind of break it out into sections, because I know the river changes, you know, in character and flow and grade throughout its journey down there. Could you kind of walk us through and give us an idea of how it changes and how it might fish differently as we go downstream?
Sure. You know, there is, like you said, there's a lot of change in this river. You know, for the most part, it is a very gradient freestone river. It's got a lot of rocks in it, has a lot of drop in it. You know, it is the most heavily used whitewater recreation river in North America for that reason. But what we always tell people is, you know, there's sections that are heavy whitewater use areas and there's sections that aren't. And there's a lot more, you know, water that is fly fishing type water than there is whitewater. You know, although you can do both in the same breath, you know, it does change quite a bit, and there's different access points that are definitely more conducive to fly fishing as you go down. But starting at Leadville, you know, the river is a small river at the top. You know, coming from the headwater, you've got the Lake Fork of the Arkansas coming down from Turquoise Reservoir that feeds into the headwater, and the headwater is really nothing more than a stream at that point, at least what we would think, a smaller freestone stream in Colorado. And then, obviously, you know, when as we move down, we've got contributing tailwaters at Twin Lakes and Clear Creek Reservoir that contribute flow. And then we pick up, obviously, other natural tributaries. And, you know, you see a small stream at the headwater of, you know, around 150, 200 CFS turn into a large river at an average flow of 700 to 1,000 CFS near Canyon City. So a lot of change there just as far as cubic feet per second and, you know, sheer volume of water. And also, the riverbed changes a lot. So, you know, when we start at the top, at the headwater, you've got one of the more gradient sections of the river coming down through the Hayden Meadows section. It kind of plateaus a bit, and that is before you reach the granite area. And we've got so many great access points. What I'd like to tell people before we kind of move down the river is that if you visit our website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com, and at the bottom of the homepage there's a link titled Arkansas River Map. If you're on the computer right now, you can follow along with me as I kind of describe what we're looking at. But we've got a fantastic interactive map that covers the breadth of the river from Leadville all the way down to Pueblo Reservoir. It also features PDF files of all these access points that I'm talking about, and those PDF files show you public and private access and topographical, you know, shot of the river, shows you kind of features and kind of what to look for and how to approach those sections. And there's over 50 different access points featured on that map. So I just wanted to mention that before we, you know, kind of move down the river.
Yeah, that's great, Taylor. I'm looking at it right now. That's probably the most extensive map of a river I've ever seen.
Well, and I really, you know, obviously, you know, recreational industry folks, including myself, other fly fishing entities on this river, you know, recreate whitewater enthusiasts, et cetera, really pushed hard to get this map created. And I'd really like to give a lot of credit to Colorado Parks and Wildlife and more specifically Arkansas Headwater Recreation Area, which is the state park that manages the entire Arkansas drainage. They were the ones that really put in the hours and the time to get this done, and obviously they've done a fantastic job, as you can see, Roger, but, you know, it's basically, it's there for you to use, and, you know, that's one of the things we tell people when they come to fish this river, because we have the most public miles, most public access of any other river, you know, of any river in the state of Colorado, is to fish different places, you know, and to enjoy all of the rec areas and the access points that we have to offer, you know, and as you can see by this map and as I kind of discuss these different areas, you could come every day of the year and not fish one spot twice on this river. I mean, it's really, really fantastic how much we have, you know, as far as access is concerned on this river. And you know, we're very, very fortunate.
Yeah, that is something that we're always, you know, we're always asking about the different fisheries is, you know, what's the access, you know, how much of it is private. And we do have some, you know, our laws are different than like Montana's or I guess we're somewhat more similar to Wyoming's in the, the water rights, aren't we, Taylor?
Yeah. As far as, yeah, similar to Wyoming. And that's why it's so important that we have, you know, the cooperation of different entities in the state as well as the federal level, you know, with BLM. And it's just so important that they work together. And we've really got a great level of cooperation on our river between state park, BLM, and now, you know, obviously with the National Monument, a little bit more federal. But it's fantastic what we've got. going for us here, and that also pertains to the flow management program, which we'll talk a little bit more about later.
Okay.
But if you'd like to kind of keep moving down, and then we'll kind of talk a little bit more about kind of the variables and the seasonality. When we're moving down from Leadville, I kind of discussed briefly the Hayden Meadows section, which is a state wildlife area. We've also got Lower Hayden Ranch there. Those are great access areas that are a little bit more kind of traditional trout stream look with more oxbow kind of open meadow features. Great, great area. One of the things as we move down as well is you know, within the trout population, what you'll find is a little bit smaller fish on the top end. They have a little bit shorter season to really take advantage of bug life and a little bit shorter growing season, so to speak. So, and fish size increases as we go down, and the largest fish on this section, the 110-mile section, are in Canyon City itself. So that's kind of what we're looking at as far as the trout population is concerned and the size ranges. But still, in the Leadville section down from the Lake Fork of the Arkansas down, still gold medal caliber, which, you know, is extremely high trout population, as well as a fair amount of fish over the 16-inch mark to even make that designation. So still a lot of nice fish in there. As we move down from Hayden Meadows, you've got the Granite area, which is just below the inflow of Lake Creek out of Twin Lakes, which is our largest tailwater tributary. And then you've got two great wreck areas below Granite. First and foremost, that I really love is that Stone Cabin area. And then, you know, Clear Creek itself flows in above Stone Creek, or Stone Cabin, and that Clear Creek again is a contributing tailwater on the top.
Taylor, that Clear Creek and Lake Creek tailwaters, are those places one would want to fish in the tailwaters?
Sure,
those?
Sure. I mean, those are very fishable. Now, the Clear Creek section from the reservoir down is a very short section, but both of those reservoirs themselves are great fisheries. You know, all of the contributing streams, freestone streams, are fantastic. Some are, you know, run 2 CFS. Some of them run 60 CFS. So and obviously that depends on the time of year. But, you know, you've got a lot of fantastic small stream fishing. In fact, I'd say with the addition of the Collegiate Range just in our backyard, near West Cliff, and then all of the contributing small streams in the Canyon City area, I think we've got some of the best small stream fishing in Colorado, you know, and then you've got the High Lakes and the Collegiate Range. So, I mean, it's really a mecca, but all of these contributing tailwaters as well as streams on the upper end from, say, Buena Vista upstream are great little fisheries, and more so in the summer. They kind of are tough in that spring time period because, you know, really from Buena Vista up can be pretty difficult in the early spring. Still some ice, shelf ice on the top end, a much, much different river and a huge elevation change as we come down. It fishes much differently in the spring, but as we move into the late spring and especially in the summer, all of this fishes fantastically upstream.
At what point, Taylor, can you start floating the river? Is it that point?
Yeah, so we you know, you can float from Granite down. You really can. I mean, essentially that. But the majority of the floating will be done from Railroad Bridge, which is below the numbers. The numbers, which is right kind of where we stopped, is below that Clear Creek inflow, and the numbers is a heavy class 5 whitewater area. It is the upper, what we term the upper whitewater park, you know, and then moving down, you've got Browns Canyon, and then you've got, Lower Bighorn Sheep Canyon and the Royal Gorge. So those are kind of the heavy whitewater areas. Most fly fishing enthusiasts, you know, floating, they're going to come in after the numbers there at Railroad Bridge and then float through the Buena Vista and maybe take out at the Buena Vista Whitewater Park or North BV Rec Area. Those are all areas you can take out. And, you know, so you can definitely start floating as high up technically as granite, but, you know, more raft, full-size 13-footer or larger put in, you know, at least below the numbers.
And in general, I mean, throughout the whole river, it's not a very drift boat-friendly river, would you say?
No, it really isn't. You know, I'm one of very few. I mean, I can think of maybe one other offhand that runs a hard boat on this river, and that's only during a specific time period, you know, 600 CFS or higher typically. You know, I even prefer to run 13-foot or even smaller raft systems with full fly fishing frame because of the technicality of this river more than anything. The rapids are very technical. They're not so much large rapids unless it's big water, you know, and then they can get pretty big. But it is a challenging river from the, you know, rowing standpoint. You definitely kind of need to be on your game. But as we move down from Vista and kind of move into the Salida area, there's some really less technical put-ins. Like at Big Bend, you can put in there and take out at Salida East. That's a very easy float. You can do that with a drift boat. The only thing you have to navigate is the Salida Whitewater Park. So it's a couple little features there. Above Big Bend, just real quick, you've got Browns Canyon, which is the National Monument. You want to talk about the National Monument while we're on that? Or
sure, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So, you know, essentially this last year, via the Antiquities Act of 1906, this was integrated as a national monument. The Browns Canyon area is one of the more heavily used whitewater areas on the river, but also from a fly fishing standpoint, it is one of the more breathtaking areas in Colorado to wet a line. I mean, it is, you know, from the wildlife standpoint, from the views, it's just a very unique canyon. And the National Monument itself encompasses just over 21,000 acres, so it's a pretty big chunk. But that's just fantastic for this river. Obviously, you know, it adds a little bit to the wildlife protection aspect. It doesn't change anything as far as regulations. And that's one thing I always tell people with the gold medal status. All regulations as far as method and keep regulations maintain within that designation. It doesn't mean everything went catch and release or something like that. From the fly fishing standpoint, you want to keep a fish, you can do that. And in a lot of areas on the Arkansas, we encourage people to keep fish because, you know, there's just so many fish. The population is so high. But basically, that Browns Canyon area is one of those areas that you'll find one of the highest trout populations on the river. It's harder to get into. You know, you can come in at the top end or come in at the bottom end at Hecla Junction and, you know, access it via, you know, floating, or you can walk in and you can overnight stay. You know, it's a fantastic use area, and BLM and, you know, U.S. Forest Service are co-managing this area. So it's just a fantastic kind of feature to this river that just came into play this last year. So we're having a lot of fun.
Is there any stocking being done, or are these all wild trout in Arkansas?
There's minimal stocking. Basically, the last major stocking effort happened after WD, you know, with the rainbow trout population.
And, whirling disease, yeah.
Yeah, swirling disease had a major effect on the rainbow trout population in this river, and starting technically about 10 years ago, ballpark, you know, state parks introduced Hofer rainbow strain back into the river and really, you know, let it run wild. And at this point in time, we've got very, very successful reproduction within the rainbow trout population. The brown trout population has been thriving since the Superfund cleanups with the mining effect in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, and you'll find the Arkansas is one of the cleanest rivers in North America now after that. And obviously with the trout population, that means bug populations, number one, are thriving. And I'll talk a little bit more about water quality when we talk about the stoneflies and their major critics. But, you know, that, yeah, you know, a lot of fish in this area naturally reproducing. You know, the Browns Canyon area is one of those that I really implore people to check out when they come fish this river. It's kind of a gem. So when we move down from Brown, we're moving kind of into that Salida area, that upper Salida area. And like I said, Stonebridge and Big Bend, those are good put-ins for less technical water. And from Big Bend to Stonebridge, that's a little less gradient, as is from Big Bend to Salida. And then from Salida downstream, just downstream, you've got the Salida East Takeout, which is a heavily used fly fishing put-in and takeout, probably the most used, and that's Section 3A. And it's a little bit less technical from Salida down. There's a few more rapids in there, but it is becoming more gradient because we're entering into Bighorn Sheep Canyon. And Bighorn Sheep Canyon runs from the east side of Salida all the way down to Parkdale Rec area. And at that point in time, we enter the Royal Gorge, which is kind of the world-famous whitewater area, and obviously the Royal Gorge Bridge spanning that. So you've got Bighorn Sheep Canyon on the upper side from Salida down through Howard, and you've got some fantastic rec areas in there. You've got Rincon. That's one of my favorite rec areas. Great access point, great overnight camping. You've got the Wellsville Bridge area just upstream. And you do have some small little towns there, Swiftvale and Howard, where you've got a little bit of private water. As you move down from Howard, though, the public water just increases. You do have some kind of Class 3 rapids to work with in there, but nothing crazy technical. And then the Valley Bridge access point just downstream from Coaldale, downstream from Howard, is one of our kind of premier rec areas. A lot of nice rainbows in that area, and this is what we would term kind of the middle of Bighorn Sheep Canyon. And really some gorgeous fish. We've taken a lot of fish over the 20-inch mark in this section.
The road is literally just right on the side of the river through most of that section, right?
Right.
Access is really easy for wade fishing, that kind of thing.
Exactly. So as you hit Salida on US 50 heading eastbound, you're going to run the river the entire way down, the entire stretch of Bighorn Sheep Canyon until you enter the opening of the Royal Gorge, and then you kick back up and head towards Canyon City. And that Bighorn Sheep Canyon section, kind of the middle section, you've got that Valley Bridge section, Canyon Trading Post, and there's bridges crossing the river that you can use to get on the north side of the river. That's a really, really good tactic for people. You know, those fish that are on the highway side obviously get fished too much. When the river's low and the easy wading, like 700 CFS or less, all the fish get fished too. During high water, the only people that can kind of reach that north shore are the ones floating or the ones that you know, are tuned in enough to know where to cross and how to access it on that backside. But, you know, as you go down through Bighorn Sheep Canyon, you've got good access points on both sides of the river. You've got the kind of famed Texas Creek area, which is kind of what I would call the epicenter of the really heavy caddis activity. We'll talk more about that. And then heading downstream, heading east, you move into that lower Bighorn Sheep Canyon section, and that's kind of that lower whitewater park. You've got some class 5 rapids, spike buck, three rocks, moving down towards Parkdale. So as far as floatability is concerned, the majority of the fly fishing users are going to take out at least at Pinnacle Rock. There are plenty of, you know, whitewater enthusiasts that fly fish, and especially in the state of Colorado, so, and all over the world. I mean, people will come here with even canoes that are skilled oarsmen and run these lower class 5 sections and fish at the same time.
Yeah, there was, Taylor, since you mentioned canoes, we did have a question from Jim Johnson in West Springfield, Massachusetts, and he asked, near what town does the river finally level out a bit from its rapid falls and become navigable by canoe for a good stretch? So if you were going to do a day's canoeing, what section would be best, considering everything we've talked about?
That will totally depend on your experience level, because I've got clients that come in and that are East Coast guys. You know, Jim, you're from Massachusetts. We've got a lot of East Coast canoers that are pretty technical that will run the numbers. They'll run stuff through Bighorn Sheep Canyon. But technically, I would say that, honestly, this is pretty tough canoeing water. You know, the whole...
There's a lot of rocks.
And if you're fly fishing from a canoe, I mean, that adds that element.
Yeah.
So, you know, technically what I would tell you is there's a great put-in takeout at Pink House Wreck Area, which is right in Canyon City. And putting in there and floating the Canyon City section is a great, great alternative. And even if you want to float from Canyon City downstream through Florence all the way, I mean, technically you can float all the way to Pueblo Reservoir, and that's all pretty flat water. It's not featureless, but it's not white water.
Right.
And, you know, the cool thing about that float is you start out in Canyon City catching trout, larger trout, as compared to, you know, the upper river. We've got the, you know, larger fish in Canyon City. And then you move in through Florence and you start catching smallmouth and carp, and you get closer to Pueblo Reservoir and you might see a wiper that moves out of the reservoir. You might see trout that are running out of Pueblo Reservoir.
Huh.
So, I mean, that's a really cool section that just doesn't get used a lot. And there's a lot of use areas there. If you take a look at that map, I mean, you've got close to a dozen, if not more, you know, areas from Florence, which is downstream of Canyon City, down to Pueblo. So, yeah, that would be the section that I would canoe more than any other, unless you really like the more technical stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break here, Taylor, and then let's come back and dive into the seasons, and you can tell us what you know about the different seasons on the Arkansas.
Perfect.
Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters, for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome, and equipment is provided. To learn more about fly fishing for women, go to www.womensflyfishing.net. That's www.womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Taylor Edrington about Seasons of the Arkansas. If you'd like to ask Taylor a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And let me just check in there, Taylor, and see if we don't have... Okay, this must be personal, Taylor. The question from Kansas City is, are gingers considered superior fly fishermen in all spaces? from Sean.
Okay.
You know Sean?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
So, yeah, we've got a great little core group of fly fishing enthusiasts in the small town of Canyon City. Sean's one of them. You know, Sean, I would think that, you know, definitely gingers are an elite class of people. And, you know, I don't know why that wouldn't pertain to fly fishing. And if you can't tell, I have red hair. That's probably.
My daughter-in-law would have loved to heard that, too. So
there you go. That's perfect. We have to
ginger,
be a,
so.
A
superior
united
in all class. Respects, yeah.
That's right.
So we did get a couple other questions in here. Sean asked, what do you hold world records for fishing? Because we did mention that in your bio.
So those are all for salmon species during
my
time in Alaska. Yeah, those are fly rod world records. Chinook and others, but yeah, spent many years in Alaska, you know, and even before my time guiding there and managing, you know, operations there, I've been going to Alaska with my dad since I was 13, 14 years old, so spent a lot of time there, and that's what those records are.
Okay. Someone asked about the location of the map again. That is at royalgorgeanglers.com, Royal, R-O-Y-A-L, Gorge, G-O-R-G-E, Anglers, better be able to spell that one, .com, and it's at the bottom of the page, so, and it says river map, can't miss it down there at the bottom in the footer of the home page, so I hope that helps you find it, and... another question here, Taylor. What's your this is Steve Perry in Centennial. What's your secret spot on the river for those big browns? It's okay, you can tell me.
I also know Steve pretty well. He's a great guy. It's no secret, Steve. Canyon City is the area. And I think with all things, you just have to put in your time. And really, you know, kind of become that fish, figure out what those bigger fish are focused on, you know, their feeding habits, what they're feeding on. Brown trout are specifically nocturnal feeders when they get large. They're not so much bug eaters either. They eat small fish. In Canyon City, we also have a fantastic population of black-nosed dace, which are small bait fish. We also have crayfish, you know, in certain areas. And we have a huge population of crane fly larvae. Some of the biggest brown trout I've caught during the day in Canyon City are on crane flies. And more European nymphing techniques come into play, heavy weighted crane flies. One of the best flies out there, I'm going to give a little, you know, some props to my buddy Frank Smethurst, who's a local Colorado guy. He's a rep for, you know, several manufacturers in the industry, and he's got a fly from Montana Fly Company called the Crane Bomb. Heavy, gets down, it's really buggy, it's big, it's a large food source for those bigger fish. That's a really good way to get to those bigger fish and hopefully, you know, entice one. The other method, as I've already alluded to, is fishing at night. Throwing streamers, throwing mouth patterns. That's what those fish eat. that's when they eat. So if you think like them, that's kind of your method. And so, you know, we've caught some big fish in Canyon City, and from the shocking boat, I've seen some even bigger fish. I mean, some huge fish, over 30 inches. So, I mean, there are opportunities to catch those fish. You just kind of have to think outside the box, see? And no secret, though. No secret.
Which crane fight pattern was that again?
That's called that's Frank Smethurst's pattern. He's a Montana Fly Company designer. And that's called the Crane Bomb, B-O-M-B, like the atom bomb, Crane Bomb.
Okay.
So,
Crane Bomb, Olive. I'm out on their site right now just looking at it. Boy, that's a cool-looking fly.
It's a great fly. And he's got a series of bombs, stoneflies, you know, cranes, midges even, Chironomids. It's a great series. Frank is a fantastic angler. Happy to kind of call him a good acquaintance, friend. We fish together. He's very fishy. He understands how to create patterns. He does a great job. So that's kind of a little bit of a little secret tidbit for you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's jump into talking about these seasons before we run out of time here. So you wanted to start off with talking about winter, which we are in the middle of. So the Arkansas is fishable during the winter?
It is. So, you know, we get a lot of calls asking if, you know, the river's thawed out yet. And, you know, it really never freezes over, so no thawing to do, even though it is a freeze zone. And there is, you know, on colder days, you've got ice flow and shelf ice, and just like any other fishery, you know, tailwaters, you've got the same thing. But in the winter season, it definitely takes a dedicated angler, takes an angler that likes to nymph fish. If you like to lure European nymph, you know, if you like that tactical nymphing setup, this is a great time to come fish this area. The area that we focus the most on in the winter is the Canyon City area, just because if you don't know anything about Canyon City, we're located in the banana belt of Colorado. A lot of
wine country.
Yeah, you know, wine country, agriculture, and for one reason, because we stay a lot warmer than a lot of, you know, the rest of the state, period. And, you know, we're 10 degrees warmer on average than the Front Range, and it's just a better scenario for the left eye, more higher water temp fish are more movement prone. They're more tuned into feeding than the fish upstream that are more lethargic. They're kind of conserving calories upstream a little bit more. But if you like the European nymph, you know, stoneflies are ever present. They're always in the water. 365 days a year, we've got huge numbers of stoneflies, anything from Pteranarcis to golden stones to micro stones, your yellow sallies. Those are good flies to focus on in the winter as a lead fly if you like to throw multiple flies running a free-swimming caddis larva, because we've always got caddis larva. You know, you've got Rhacophala and other free-swimming caddis. And then midge life is huge in the winter. Midges are a fly that we really don't fish in other seasons because the fish here are kind of snobs and they don't like to eat little midges when there's a lot of other bug life. So definitely not like a tailwater in that midges fish year-round. But during the winter season, you've got midge, you know, activity throughout the life cycle. You've got larva. You've got pupa representation. You've got adults. On nice warm days, sunny days, we're fishing a lot of adult midges in the winter. So, you know, you can come fish a dry in the wintertime here too, but I would say 95% of the fishing is going to be done subsurface. And, we do a lot of winter fishing on the Arkansas tailwater below Pueblo Reservoir. It was voted a top 50 tailwater in North America. I actually wrote the chapter in Wendy and Terry Gunn's book, 50 Best Tailwaters to Fly Fish. It's a fantastic fishery, one that is very well known now. There's a lot of pressure, just like a lot of, you know, Colorado tailwaters in the winter. But it's a good option, and it stays warm like it does in Canyon City. So we kind of look at that. But as far as winter fishing on the Freestone River from Canyon City upstream, we, like I said, focus on those more European nymphing techniques, high stick nymphing. You know, if you like to fish an indicator, fishing 9-foot leaders, you know, it's still super clear. Flow rates are typically around 500, you know, mid 500 CFS cubic feet per second in the winter. State parks and other water entities move water during the winter in order to make room for snowmelt. And also doing that, you keep the water column warmer, keep the trout happier in the winter, less ice formation with that higher flow as well, rather than bringing it down to a native flow of around 200 CFS. So we do move some water in the winter, and that helps the fishery. We've got a fantastic flow management program on this river I'd like to spotlight as we go through the seasons. And, you know, number one aspect of that in cooperation with agricultural use downstream is the biological standpoint of the river, and paramount is the trout population. Biologists on this river are more concerned with trout than anything else. And obviously we have a lot of notoriety, number one fish river in the state of Colorado, number-wise, and, you know, 102-mile gold medal section, so they've got a lot of heat on them to keep it good. But, you know, the flow management program is a huge piece of that, the success of this river. It is the piece. So, you know, as we move through the seasons, I'll talk a little bit about how they manage release out of our contributing tailwaters to keep the flows where they need to be for recreational aspects. So you've kind of got the winter season.
Right, what's next?
And then we kind of move out of that quickly. As you said, Roger, we're in the winter season, but we're not long in the winter season. What happens as we move into late February is our huge stonefly population begins a stage of their life cycle called the stonefly molt. And when they're molting, they're going through a process called new star phasing. And what happens is their exoskeleton changes coloration and composition. And what they're doing is they're preparing for their hatch time period on the Arkansas, that's June and through July. And, you know, even with the amount of stoneflies we have, we see stoneflies hatching through September. But, you know, this new star phase happens in February, which is a key piece of the pie, and it really kind of triggers trout activity as far as feeding activity. What also happens as we move into March is tributary release is reduced for one reason and one reason alone, and that's for the brown trout fry emergence that occurs in March. And obviously that is, you know, our brown trout population spawns in the fall, and then those fry emerge and find areas of least resistance, you know, estuarial areas during that March time period. And that's why we reduce flows to a more native flow during that time period to help with that success rate for our brown trout population. And at that same point in time, weather's warming. We have a lot of 65, 70-degree days in March. And along with that, you've got warming water temperatures, and that's key. What happens along with stonefly molt, and you've kind of got a continuation of the stonefly molt into March, but what happens with that is you've got heavy blue-winged olive activity beginning. And I oftentimes call it the sleeper hatch on the Arkansas because, in my opinion, this is the most overlooked hatch on this river. You know, we're known for a giant caddis hatch. A lot of people call it the Mother's Day hatch, which it isn't. We'll talk a little bit about that next. But UWO hatch, the Blooming Olive hatch in March is just fantastic. And what we've seen with increasing water quality is increasing CWO presence throughout the year, but most specifically in March and through April. When caddis are hatching, we have CWOs hatching at the same time and in huge, you know, huge hatches, prolific hatches. So this is a time period that we really focus on. You know, March is some of the best fishing on this river. Still a lot of great nymphing going on, but, you know, some great technical dry fly fishing. If you like to fish a single dry, small single dry, this is a great time to do it. Great emerger fishing as well, because you've got so much CWO emergence that fish are beginning to key to that movement in the water column. And this is a great time. You know, I know there's a question on here about wet fly fishing, I think, Roger.
Yeah.
This is a great time to start wet fly fishing because of that emergence that starts occurring. And then kind of as we move into the caddis time period, that only increases with the way caddis emerge, and we'll talk about that briefly.
But yeah, no. Just to make note, that was Boris in Ohio. We did a show quite a few years ago with Taylor's dad, Bill Edrington, on wet fly fishing. So a lot of that applies to the Arkansas. You might want to look that up in our archive, along with the show I did with his dad on the caddis fly specifically. So two shows to supplement Taylor's show tonight that you'll want to look up. So,
well, you know, to kind of quote, you know, a river runs through it. My dad is the professor. You know, he actually was a professor, but, you know, he's a professor of trout. He taught me more than anybody else, you know, how to approach trout fishing and otherwise. But he knows a lot about bugs, and he knows a lot about trout habits, and, you know, he knows more about this river than anybody else, in my opinion. So it's those are great, you know, podcasts. I've listened to those several times, but so I highly recommend people look those up. But the wet fly stuff really starts heavily in that BWO time period, and because fish are keying to movement, and when you're swinging wet flies with soft tackles, that, you know, you've got patterns that move a lot. And you're, that swinging method, obviously, you know, you're moving that fly from position A deeper in the water column to position B in the subsurface foam. And you've got to have that bug population doing the same thing in order for fish to kind of key to that. And that occurs in the BWO time period in March. We've got a lot of wet fly fishermen from all over the world that come to fish this river in March and April because of that. So one thing to kind of focus on with mayfly activity in March, the BWO specifically, is that there's kind of some key variables, some key conditions that we look at. We really like for water temperature to be in the low 40s, mid-40s at least. That's when we see the more prolific BWO hatches, and typically by the first week of March, we're starting to see those. By the end of March, we're seeing nearly, you know, mid-40s to upper 40s. And then, you know, we see a lot of multiple hatch days on the Arkansas. Typically, I'll see a hatch start around 11 o'clock and maybe another hatch in the early afternoon, mid-afternoon. It can change. There's a lot of fluid change in which hatch is the largest. A lot of that kind of depends on conditions, depends on where you are in the river. But, you know, if you're really looking for that prime time date for the BWO activity and still a continuation of stonefly activity, and I really look at that St. Patrick's Day time period, that, you know, third, fourth week of March, which we so happen to have our Arkansas River Fly Fishing Festival during that time period here at the shop, and we hold stream side classes and all kinds of stuff that exact weekend. That's for a reason, because the fishing's great. So Let's move on to caddis, Roger, because this
sure.
is a hot topic, obviously. The caddis hatch has been well known on this river for a long time. You know, we've had prolific caddis activity since I can remember, since I was born, you know, before that, obviously. And it's still a fantastic hatch. It's still a huge hatch. We still have blizzard hatches on this river. In fact, this last year, we had one of the larger hatches I can remember in the last decade as far as giant hatches moving up the river. The first thing I would like to tell people is that it is not the Mother's Day hatch. I even see a question here about the Mother's Day caddis hatch, and that's a common misconception. To be clear, it's the Mother's Day caddis. The Brachycentrus occidentalis, the black caddis, is a Mother's Day caddis. That's from the East Coast. That was named in the East Coast, but it doesn't mean that it hatches during Mother's Day. It means that it hatches maybe on the East Coast during Mother's Day, but on the Arkansas, it begins hatching. We begin to see heavy caddis pupation in Canyon City, and that's where it all starts, because water temperature is warmer in Canyon City, and then the hatch successively moves up the river from there as water temperature and other conditional elements, radiant heat, sunlight, all of those things come into play, and as those things line up for the caddis population, it moves upriver. But we start to see heavy caddis activity the first week of April in Canyon City. And we call it the tax day hatch for a reason. You know, when that date comes and you send your tax return in, send your money to Uncle Sam or maybe get a refund, take that refund and come fish with us because, honestly, that's the prime time on this river for heavy caddis activity. And typically by tax day, we're seeing, heavy activity in lower Bighorn Sheep Canyon. And I mentioned before that Texas Creek is kind of that epicenter for heavy caddis activity. And typically, third, fourth week of April, we're seeing just heavy, heavy caddis activity in that section.
So there you go. That was a question that Ari and Encino had asked. Second week of April, what's the best part of the river that time of year? So,
well, hard to beat, Ari. I mean, hard to beat is that Texas Creek section. Really, I'd say from Cotopaxi downstream is going to be fantastic because we have a continuation of BW activity. We've got caddis activity. Once the caddis have begun to hatch in an area, they continue to hatch for weeks and weeks. We have a huge blizzard hatch happen, but it doesn't stop. It doesn't just happen for one day. It continues, tames down a little bit. The one thing I'd like to tell people is, you really don't want to fish in those giant hatches, and it's for a good reason. Is there's too many naturals on water, and most likely all of the fish in that area have already forged on adults or pupa, the emerger. And so if you're fishing in one of those heavy, heavy hatches, one of those hatches that the Arkansas is famed for, the ones where you can't breathe, there's so many bugs on the water, you want to get in your car and you want to drive a couple miles upstream to an area where that giant hatch hasn't happened. Maybe there's sporadic hatches, but there's heavy emerger activity, heavy pupa activity. That pupation is really where you catch the majority of the fish. I mean, I could not tie on an adult all caddis hatch long, and I would still catch a ton of fish on a pupa. And that's why the wet fly fishermen come during this time period, is because you can swing Gary LaFontaine sparkle pupa. You can swing, there's a specific pattern called the swing caddis. That's a great fly. Other pupa patterns that just work fantastic during this time period. So, and then, kind of what we're looking for is that 45 degree mark for heavy caddis activity, moving up the canyon. Anything higher than that and you've got caddis movement, But this is a great time period. I don't want to belittle the catfish on this river because it's fantastic, but everybody knows about it already. You know, there's so many other great hatches that we'll talk about coming up that I love just as much as caddis season. But April, no doubt, is a fantastic time. Just don't come mid-May, late May, because you're going to miss it. Runoff happens at that point in time. And, you know, the caddis would continue to hatch through May if Mother Nature didn't ring the bell and bring water down the hill. But that always happens in late May, mid-May. So to really focus on caddis, come in mid-April, late April, early May. As we go from the caddis hatch, obviously I've already...
Oh, there was, before you go off, Frank from Denver had a question about, you know, what's the subsurface fly to use during the caddis Mother's Day hatch, the larva or the pupa?
Well, I mean, both. There's no one fly. I talked about the pupa a lot, but I didn't really so much talk about the larva, and it's a very, very important life cycle stage that we fish really heavily in March as well, because there are a lot of caddis in the water column before they come into their caddis case and close their case and begin to incubate. They do that, and they incubate for a few weeks, and then they hatch. And so in March, we fish a lot of caddis larvae because they're ever-present in the water column. And then we fish larvae a ton, obviously, because in April, because, you know, we're those larvae are popping out of their case, and they're entering their larval drift, and, you know, there's, you know, gazillion of them in the water column. So, you know, they're both important flies, both important life cycle stages, and, you know, there's a ton of great patterns for both.
Yeah, good. Okay, so you said next runoff time, huh?
Let's move into runoff, and I'm not even going to spend an extra second on this. This is what happens, you know.
Right.
Sun angle hits our high snow fields that are at 13,000, 14,000 feet. And it is about sun angle. It's not about heat. It's not about air temp. When the sun angle's right and the sun's on those snow fields for a certain time, you know, period of time, that high mountain snow starts to come off. And this is not low-level snow. It's all the big runoff. When it happens, it's all high-level snow. And, you know, it can peak near 5,000 CFS or higher. But what happens after that is really what I want to talk about. I mean, this is one of my favorite time periods, is what happens in the end of June when runoff begins to recede. And it may still be 3,000 CFS. More oftentimes it's 2,000 to 2,500. But what happens is the edges begin to clear. And that's really all we need, because, you know, what happens during runoff is all these trout find areas of least resistance. They're lazy by nature. You know, they're not going to expend more energy than they need to. So those areas of least resistance are against the shore. They're against the edge. And what happens when we start to see the receding water, it's just perfect timing, because the stonefly population begins to move to the edge, and that's exactly where they hatch. So it's fishing in a barrel. It literally is fishing in a barrel. We always joke about that, but receding edge, what we call the receding edge or the clearing edge time period, all the fish are within 3 feet of the bank, and there's giant stoneflies hatching. Terranarsis, there's golden stone, there's isoperlas, you know, there's a bunch of different stoneflies hatching at the same time. And fish are very hungry after, you know, at least 3 weeks of heavy runoff. And it's really one of those time periods where you can catch triple digits in a day.
Because Taylor, what's your presentation techniques when the water's, you know, when you're fishing the edges?
So it's real simple. You know, leave your waders at home. We don't want you waiting at 2,000 plus CFS. I mean, I don't. I consider myself a pretty strong wader, but I'm not in the river at that point. I put on a pair of wading boots and some neoprene socks, and I walk the edges. And what I do is I find a location where I can move from downriver moving up river, I'll fish a dry, maybe a dry dropper, maybe a double dry, and I'll fish the pocket moving up against the edge within 3 feet of the bank. I fish everything. I make tons of casts. And I'll fish
a section. So you're casting straight upstream, basically, from you?
Moving straight upstream, yeah. Presentation is not an issue at this point in time. Fish are hungry. So if you put it in front of a fish, you can line them, and it's not an issue. Other time periods where the river's clear, low, fish are more pressured, maybe, you know, different things, those are issues, but not at this point in time. You can present a cast over them, line them, you know, they don't care. We're fishing big, big patterns, chubby Chernobyls, chubby Normans, double Dutch bugs, size 4 through size 12. Like I said, maybe throw a Copper John dropper, maybe throw another dry underneath. There's other bugs hatching during that time period, caddis, other things coming off, so you might do a double dry. So what I'll do is like I said, fishing upriver, and then what I do coming back is maybe I carry an additional rod, a 6-weight, with a streamer set up, or I switch over to a fast-sink poly leader on my 5-weight or whatever I'm fishing dry with, and then I fish a streamer working back. So maybe I work a section that's a mile long or less or more, and then, you know, I take a break, you know, eat a sandwich, and work a streamer back. And that's when you catch the big fish on the streamers, and you always catch fish that you went over with the dry. So it's a great time period, and like I said, it's a huge number time period. You can catch a ton of fish during this time, more than any other, because all the fish are in a small location. Otherwise, the fish, you know, dilute, they move into the river, they move into other structure, the middle, you know, other structures. So, you know, this is just an easy time period. It really is fishing in a barrel. Fantastic. And sometimes that'll last into the first week of July, but it's really a small time period. You really got to look for, and what I tell people is always look at our reports, because it can be different every year as to when it starts. Sometimes it's the second week of June, sometimes the third, sometimes the fourth week. But typically in that time range, and then working into the first few weeks of July sometimes. But sometimes the river drops pretty hard, and we just move into that summer kind of prime time season where it's 700 to 1,000, and at that point in time, the fish move to other locations as well, and you kind of lose that fishing in a barrel. And let's move in quickly into that, because I know we're running out of time, and
yeah,
I want to cover all of these other topics. But when we move into the summer season, like I said, flows are dropping. They're 1,000 CFS typically or less. Water temperatures are increasing with the lower water and higher air temp. Typically 48 to 55 degrees is typically what we see during this time period, and with that, we see a lot of hatch action, a lot of activity in the water column. Specifically, pale morning duns, yellow sallies. Yellow sallies are just one of the gems on this river. We get huge yellow sally hatches. A lot of people think they're caddis hatches. They're so big. They're small micro stonefly hatching. That yellow sally hatches is one that is long, starts in July, moves through August, and fish love them. I mean, I don't know how they taste. I mean, I've eaten a couple before, and, you know, they seem pretty buggy to me, but there's something about them. And so pale morning duns, yellow sallies, and caddis. There's so many different types of caddis in this river, but during this time period, we see a continuation of black caddis, we see tan caddis, we see olive caddis, anywhere from a size 14 through an 18. So we fish a lot of caddis as well. And this is a great, great time period to fish hatches. And then we kind of move into that hopper-dropper season, which typically is August. We have flows dropping below 900 typically, but they could be as low as 500 after August 15th. Our flow management program keeps flows above 700 CFS until August 15th for two reasons. Number one, to keep the water temperature cooler. With more water and higher water temps, you've got cooler water, or I'm sorry, higher air temps, you've got cooler water. And we like to keep the water cooler during these hot time periods, air temp-wise. Keeps the trout happy. Number two, it's a huge recreational river for whitewater. And so, you know, 700 CFS is a range that keeps boaters happy. It's a fantastic fly fishing range. It's my favorite flow range. If it could be 700 all year long, I would be happy, maybe besides the brown trout fry emergent time period. And fish would be happy too, but there's not enough water to go around. So, you know, that hopper-dropper season in August is fantastic. This is a kind of a fabled time period on the Arkansas. People love to come fish multiple fly rigs with a big terrestrial up front, hopper, Amy's Ant, or, you know, a chubby Chernobyl, and then drop a variety of nymphs. You know, we start to see red quill activity during this time period, see pale morning duns, caddis activity, see a few drakes start to hatch, so you could throw a drake nymph in the mix. Stonefly nymph, one of my favorite patterns during this time period is the Guide's Choice Hare's Ear. That's a fantastic fly. You can find that pretty much anywhere. It fishes great for a variety of things. I fish a Guide's Choice Hare's Ear from a size 12 to an 18, heavy tungsten bead. It's a great, great time period. And with that hopper-tropper, you know, system, a lot of people are adding a fly, hopper-copper dropper. If it's hot and the sun's high and the water is really clear, then sometimes you need to get down in the water column a little bit. And so running a hopper-copper, you know, that copper being a maybe a heavier attractor nymph like a Guide's Choice Hare's Ear or a Copper John or, you know, something like that, and then running a hatch-matching nymph like a, you know, red quill nymph or something like that, depending on what's going on, as your third fly, that's a really good tactic. We end up catching multiple fish a lot. Can't tell you how many double-ups on 1 liter I see when I'm guiding during this time period. I mean, it happens a lot. Fish move a ton during this time period. They, you know, especially if I'm guiding out of the boat, I'll watch a fish move from the shoreline 4 or 5 feet to take a fly, maybe more. I mean, fish are, they kind of know that they want to gain calories during this time period, and then, you know, even into the early fall, into the September time period, especially being in that, you know, 90% of our trout population are brown, you know, they know that spawning time period's coming. So that late August through September time period, it's a great time to fish multiple fly rigs. It's a good time. I call the late August, September time period the attractor time period, where we fish a lot of attractor drives. Humpies, never sink truds, Coachman truds, hippie stoppers, stuff like that. You know, red bodies, because we've got a lot of red quills hatching. We also fish a lot of green drakes, gray drakes, slate drakes during this time period. And this is, it wasn't always that we had a lot of drakes on the Arkansas. Just recently, really, in the last 4 or 5 years, we start to see a lot of drakes. And the reason is we've got a tunnel that brings water from the other side of the Continental Divide to our basin called the Fry Arc Tunnel. It comes from the frying pan drainage, which, if any of you guys know, the frying pan is a fabled drake fishery. And that's how our biologists think we got a large drake population in the recent history. So, anyways, that kind of moves us through September, you kind of have a flurry of activity. It doesn't really stop from runoff through September. And then I have trouble calling this next time period the streamer time. I used to call it streamer time, but to tell you the truth, we fish streamers all the time. With the exception of winter, when fish are a little more lethargic, not movement prone. But I start fishing streamers in March and really don't stop until November. We fish a lot of tandem rig streamers, fish a big fly up front and run a smaller streamer underneath. You know, fish are really going to be aggressive to that front fly and then kind of take that second fly. Tandem rigs work really, really well everywhere if you're fishing a streamer. We fish, you know, articulated flies, circus peanuts, spec dungeons, you know, all kinds of different great, you know, articulates as well. But, you know, like I said, that time period is really all season now. We used to see just a huge upturn in streamer activity during that time period, you know, September, when our brown trout population is pre-spawn and they're getting very aggressive and territorial. But, you know, not that it's not a great time, which I think it is the best time to fish a streamer. But, you know, we fish streamers year-round here, and especially out of the boat, we fish a lot of streamers.
Yeah.
So.
Well, excellent job, Taylor, on educating us on the Arkansas River, but we're out of time now. In fact, we're well past out of time. So
yeah.
We're going to have to cut things off, but you really packed it in there. It's really a lot of information to cover in the time we had, so I appreciate that. But stick with me here, because we're going to give away that DVD from your shop. And yeah, from Larry Kingery, and we want to see who's going to win that. So I'm going to have you help me make sure we get the right answer to the question I'm going to ask. So, folks, just stick with me another minute or two, and we'll get those prizes handed out and the drawings done, and we'll close it off for tonight. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is the home to the largest runs of wild salmon in the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The pebble mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may also be at risk. The entire fly fishing industry is united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org to learn more and to get involved. Again, it's SaveBristolBay.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage, the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. Now it's time to give away some of our prizes. The winners for the drawings are randomly selected from this show's registration database, and if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on some of the incredible prizes that we give away. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show to provide you with information on how to receive your gift. Okay, now, first thing we're going to give away is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, and that's a great organization to support. They deal with not only cold water, but warm water and salt water, and have a ton of conservation efforts that they're involved in. So if you don't win tonight, go there anyway. It's fedflyfishers.org and become a member. Again, it's fedflyfishers.org. Okay, so our winner for that is, let me fire up, looks like Larry Kudrick, or Kudrick, and in Arkansas. That's appropriate. Arkansas the state, not Arkansas the river. So, so Larry, congratulations on your membership to the Federation, and I know you'll enjoy it. Second drawing we're going to do is for a one-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, courtesy of Amato Books. And if you want to learn more about the publications and books that Amato has, go to AmatoBooks.com, and you'll see everything that they have there. Our winner there is Joe Herndon, and Joe is in Texas. So congratulations, Joe. I hope you make good use of the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. Okay, so now time to give away a copy of Designed to Deceive, which is a DVD which features Royal Gorge Angler's head guide, Larry Kingery, and he's talking with some of the more innovative fly tiers in the industry about how they design patterns. So get ready. You provide your answer on the home page under that in that text box there. And the question is, on February 19th, 2015, President Obama designated 21,586 acres of pristine canyons, rivers, and backcountry forest in Colorado, known as the what? How's that, Taylor? Is that a good question? I got them. Usually it's a fishing question, but this one it's I don't think National Monument is not going to cut it, Dean. We need more than that, don't we, Taylor? We need the full name, yeah.
Because there were 13 National Monuments.
Bighorn Sheep Canyon. What do you think, Taylor?
Not close enough. I don't know.
Not close. Good, yeah. Further upstream, right? We'll give them a hint.
Yep.
Okay, I've got Browns Canyon.
Perfect.
But that's not the whole thing, is it? Or should we accept that? I'll leave it up to you.
I think you've got the gist there.
Okay. So Phil McCartney, congratulations. Browns Canyon National Monument is what we were talking about that Taylor was so enthusiastic about that designation. And well deserved, huh, Taylor?
Well deserved.
Yeah. So, Phil, congratulations, and Phil, send me your address, and I'll get that over to Taylor, and he'll send you out that DVD. So, hope you enjoy that. Okay, and that does it for the giveaways. Taylor, just want to say thanks again. I really appreciate you being on the show tonight, and you just packed it in tonight. You really did with great information. So thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. So our next broadcast will be on February 17th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, I'm going to interview Rich Strolis. The topic of the show will be Catching Shadows. Rich, a signature fly tire for the Montana Fly Company, which Taylor had mentioned earlier tonight, he designs and ties flies with a purpose. The toughest fish require a different approach and different flies. So listen in to learn about Rich's unique designs and how to fish them. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements, so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.